But I think that if that's his motivation to protect his wife from being beaten down, hurt, stressed out, you know, by the co-parent, then it makes sense that he would say, okay, we need to deal with him differently because that's going to affect his marriage with her. And
definitely,
obviously he's not only wanting to protect her, but he's wanting to protect his marriage.
Yes.
Yeah. However, the other caveat is if he has come into this relationship and doesn't like what he sees, and he automatically assumes it needs to be done differently, and here's how I think she ought to do it, and he's giving her orders, that is completely disrespecting and disregarding the fact that there's a family history here.
Yes.
Hey, this is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized, and agonized a few times to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day, and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go?
Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Hi, Diane.
Hey, Rick.
How are you?
How are you? I'm good.
I'm good too.
It is a sunny day at the beach, so...
Oh,
I'm loving
wow.
The weather because it's like hovering around 70 degrees and it's blue sky and sunny, a little breezy, but it's spring break here for the locals.
Yeah. Oh, my.
So that you would think that means that everybody here would go away, but I think it also means that a lot of kids that live here or on spring break or live in the surrounding areas are all now on the beach.
So yeah.
I haven't taken my regular walk on the beach this week because I don't like all the crowds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like my beach.
Well, it's not your beach.
It's not.
No. But it's not all of theirs either. So
exactly. So what's going on in your world?
Well, you know, we had those storms come through here. Oh, yeah. And some of them pretty severe. So last night was a little chilly, breezy, mm-hmm. chilly. Okay. I had a nice fire in the back porch.
Wow.
On my little bonfire thing.
Yeah.
So that was nice. It was a big fire. I like fires.
Yeah.
Fire pits. I like those. I enjoy sitting around a good fire watching it crackle.
Most men do. Tell me why men are pyromaniacs.
I don't know. It's just something about watching the fire.
I like watching a fire pit. Like, my husband and my son like get giddy with a pack of matches in their hand. Like, what,
really?
Can light on fire?
Yeah. Yeah, run away, everybody.
I know. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. What are we going to talk about today, Rick?
Let's talk about, you figured out how to co-parent and then you remarry. And now you have a whole new perspective coming in, telling you what to do.
That is really hard.
It
happens in two ways. When your co-parent remarries,
mm-hmm.
that can throw a monkey wrench into the old co-parent relationship.
Often
or
does.
When you remarry,
mm-hmm.
and you've got an extra voice in your ear.
Mm, right.
And so I have a lot to say about that today, and I'm sure you do as well. So I want to read an email that I got from Ashley. Thank you, Ashley. She sent this through our website. She said, there's a long email, so I am going to skip to the present. She gives me some background, but I don't think we need all that. She said, I have been remarried. I have been married for the last 5 years. And ever since I began setting parenting boundaries with my co-parent, he and my spouse, needless to say, can't get along. Our son, who is now soon to be 12, is so frustrated and fed up that I too feel defeated. My spouse says I regularly let my ex force me into giving up, and I just don't fight for my son. He tells me how I should talk to him and how to push the conversation in my direction, but that is not how my ex and I have ever communicated. And then she goes on to talk a little bit about the son being involved in motocross and how that's causing a lot of conflict because apparently these motocross events are not scheduled well, and they come up at the last minute. And she ends that with saying, my son is always left with being the one to decide to choose. And I think what she means, he either has to choose his motocross event or he has to choose a weekend with mom. And the mom's new spouse is saying, you know, are you going to let your ex take him for one more weekend and give up your weekend? And she's thinking, well, I want my child to do what he wants to do. So somebody is probably saying to the kid, would you rather go on vacation with your mom or would you rather go compete in your motocross event?
Yikes.
Which is a horrible place to put a child.
Yes.
So, Ashley, we're going to talk about, I know your question really ended with wanting to know what to do about this calendar issue. And Rick and I discussed that. And it sounds like if it's in your parenting plan, you just need to follow the plan. If it's not, you need to get some more detailed parameters. A
better plan, yeah.
In your parenting plan about extracurricular activities, because it sounds like there isn't really anything that guides you around that. So we're not going to talk about that as much as this dynamic of having a spouse, and this is a 5-year marriage now, so he's not a new spouse anymore. He's
right.
He's been in for 5 years. She said earlier in the email that they have been separated or divorced since the child was an infant.
18 months old.
18 yep. months old. So we can assume for the first maybe 5 years of this child's life, mom mm-hmm. and dad were co-parenting, maybe not in a perfect way, but whatever they were doing somehow was working.
Right.
Since she's been remarried in the last 5 years, and since the child has gotten into this new activity that it sounds like he really loves, and maybe his biological dad loves it with him, she's just found herself stuck in the middle.
Stuck in the middle, right.
Between maybe her ex spouse and son and her new spouse, and trying to figure out who to prioritize.
Uh-huh.
And so
she's worked really hard to keep her child out of the middle, only to find herself in the middle between an ex-spouse and a new spouse.
Right. And it strikes me that she said her new spouse, or I don't know if we need to, we'll say current spouse, because he's not new anymore. he said she needs to fight for her son more. But it sounds like when she takes his advice and fights, it puts the son in the middle.
Right. Yes.
So is that really where you want to be?
Definitely not.
So I'm really questioning whether what her current spouse is telling her has anything to do with fighting for her son.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't want to see her compromised. And that could happen. Okay. I mean, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay. All right.
I don't want to right away say he must be a control freak. Let's say he's just protective.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
So there's a balance here. If your current spouse sees you always upset, always beaten down, always stressed out about everything and anything the former spouse says, does, whatever, he or she has a right to say to you, this way that you communicate isn't good for you.
Right.
And you should listen to that. Because they're an objective person. I don't know if her current spouse has children, has been divorced, has a co-parent. It doesn't matter because every co-parent relationship is different.
Yep.
Which, you know, beware of that. Maybe you have a stellar relationship with your co-parent, but your new spouse or your current wife or husband has a horrible relationship. You can't superimpose what you have onto another family because the dynamics are unique. So there's that. But I think that if that's his motivation to protect his wife from being beaten down, hurt, stressed out, you know, by the co-parent, then it makes sense that he would say, okay, we need to deal with him differently because that's going to affect his marriage with her. And
definitely,
he's not only wanting to protect her, but he's wanting to protect his marriage.
Yes.
Yeah. However, the other caveat is if he has come into this relationship and doesn't like what he sees, and he automatically assumes it needs to be done differently, and here's how I think she ought to do it, and he's giving her orders, that is completely disrespecting and disregarding the fact that there's a family history here.
Yes.
And anytime you marry into a blended family, you have to respect each other's history with their own children.
Absolutely.
And if she says, hey, listen, the first 5 years of our divorce, this is how we did it, and it kept the peace, and I think my kid was happy, and you might not like that I give in occasionally, but when I do, it's because it feels more peaceful to me, and my kid gets what he wants, and I just need you to respect that, then he needs to respect that.
Yes. And I want to add to that, it may be that all she needs from her current spouse is just to recognize that this is hard on me. I'm not going to change it because I still think this is the best thing to do, the best way to go about it, but it doesn't make it easy. And I appreciate you seeing how hard this is on me and having empathy for me, but that's really all I need from you. I don't need you to correct me about it.
Yeah, it's just like what we say about parenting and blended families. You know, the biological parent should be the one to do the parenting in the moment, mm-hmm. unless that parent leaves the house and hands the power over to the step parent. But any commentary, especially negative commentary about how the parent is parenting his or her biological children, should be done behind closed doors.
Oh, yeah.
You don't call out the parent in front of the child and say, you shouldn't do that, or you should do this instead, because that's just that divides, that doesn't conquer anything. Mm-mm. Same thing here, you know, kind of like Rick, when, I don't know if you've ever been put into a management position at a new company and you got a new job and you don't walk in and act like you know everything and start ordering people around. You will not be a good manager.
No, you will not endear yourself to anybody.
What do you have to do when you walk into a situation where you're leading people and they've already been led?
Well, yeah, there's a culture there that defines their belonging. And you can change some things, but you need to change them very slowly. And you have to figure out first, what is the glue that's holding the culture together to make sure you don't do any serious damage?
Right. So this isn't much different. You walk into a family system, it already has moving pieces and parts. And, you know, even if they appear dysfunctional, lots of families operate okay, even in their dysfunction, right?
Right.
We all have a little bit of dysfunction. And, you know, we always talk about it as like being a mobile over an infant's crib.
Hmm.
Each piece of the mobile is suspended by a different length of string or whatever is holding the little piece on the mobile. And each piece has a certain weight. And that mobile goes around, you know, a certain way because each part is doing its job.
Yep.
When someone comes in and yanks one of those pieces off of the mobile, what happens to it? Well, the first thing happens is it goes haywire and it just starts rolling all over the place and it's not doing anything productive. And then when it settles, it's lopsided.
Yes.
Because you took an important piece out of the mix thinking you were fixing it. Because I didn't like that piece. It was ugly. I'm just going to remove it. Well, now it can't operate.
A delicate balance. Yes.
So yeah, it has to be respected and has to be treated with care. And like you said, changes if needed.
Mm-hmm.
made slowly. And I think when we were talking about this before, Rick, you said it's kind of like you have to choose the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
Would you expound a little bit about that, how Ashley might be experiencing the lesser? She's choosing what she thinks is the lesser of two evils, and all her spouse can view is, but this looks damaging too.
Right.
Work through that.
Yeah, it would not surprise me at all. I mean, as we've said, Ashley knows the history. She knows the ex, and she's done things that have worked for, we're estimating, about 5 years. And I could see that she has come to some decisions and some skills about heading something off in the future. It's like, you know, I'm giving into this, or I'm saying yes to this, because if I don't, it's going to cause even a bigger problem later. And yeah, this is not ideal, but it's much, much better than what I would end up with if I didn't do this now.
Right. And I think that's where her spouse has to respect that she knows her co-parent better than he does.
Mm-hmm.
And so what? He has a hissy fit. You know, if I'm talking about her co-parent, if,
right.
you know, she does this or that, she might be able to tolerate that, but she knows if she goes over here and does this other thing, he may take her to court. And she's like,
right.
I'm really not willing to go there. So I'm willing to give that up, because in her mind, she's making daily decisions like all parents do, that this is important to my child. That over there is not so important to my child.
Right.
Hey, listeners, you've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers, and the same can be said about co-parenting. If navigating the beginning of the year has been difficult due to a co-parent's alcohol abuse, I have the perfect solution. It's called SoberLink. SoberLink is more than a portable alcohol monitoring tool. It's a pathway to new beginnings and stronger, healthier family dynamics. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition confirms their identity. Tamper sensors flag any attempts to cheat, and results get sent instantly to your phone, giving you peace of mind that your kids are with a sober parent. So lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit www.soberlink.com/dilemmas to learn more and get $50 off of your device.
So to put this in practical terms, and you know, I'm going to read between the lines in Ashley's situation, that you know, dad is not a good planner. He somehow is the one that kind of figures out where the motocross tournaments and events are, and maybe they're far away from where they live. And you know, at the last minute, she plans things far ahead because she's a planner. But at the last minute, he gets his kid all excited about, oh, but we've got to go these 3 hours away to this motocross event on Saturday. I know it's your mom's weekend, but
you're right.
Don't you want to go? And then mom maybe isn't all that interested in motocross, or maybe she has other children that she has to attend to and get them places. So she's frustrated and just says, okay, well, you take him. And, if we can get there, we'll get there. And her spouse is sitting there going, why do you let him walk over you? Like
right.
That?
Yeah. You're ruining our plans for the weekend. Yeah.
Right. But she may in her mind be thinking, well, geez, number one, my kid really wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be different if the child was screaming and crying, don't make me go. But she's saying he's enjoying this. So we all know that a 12-year-old, when they decide they want to do an activity, they don't care which parent goes with them or takes them. Do they?
I doubt it. They just want to be
unless
there.
Unless they're scared that one parent will make a scene. they don't want a parent embarrassing
them. Don't want both
them.
Of them there, right.
But typically, they're just glad to get a ride.
Yeah.
You know, because I want to go be with my friends or my teammates or whatever. So mom is probably thinking rationally about that, but the fact that she's giving in to someone who her spouse views as a bully makes him feel diminished somehow.
Right. I could see an argument here that why do you keep putting your kid over you and ours relationship. You and ours relationship is suffering because of the choices you're making.
But how would that, in the situation I just described, how would it make their relationship suffer? They would just be without a kid.
Well, it depends. It depends on what their plans were. Like if they were planning a trip to hiking or the mountains and they were going to take the son with them. Yeah. And now to be with a son, I've got to go to motocross. The mountain is out.
Right. And that must be what she means at the end when she says, my son is always left with being the one to decide or choose. Mm-hmm. So that's a good example. So who's going to go to the sun and say, would you rather go hiking in the mountains or do you want to go to your motocross? Right. And that's a terrible place to put a child.
It is.
Because now he's got to think, well, which parent do I please? Uh-huh. Is it okay for me to do what I really want to do? Or am I hurting my mom if I say I really want to go to motocross? And what if I do want to do the hiking? And it might be a hard decision. Maybe he wants to do both, but you know, that's life. Yep. You can't be everywhere at once. So right. He really does. I think the way she presents it to him can make all the difference.
Yeah.
If dad says, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to go to that stupid hiking trip or do you want to go to the fun motocross thing with me? Uh-huh. And mom says, you're going to go to motocross again? We haven't been hiking for 3 years. This is our grand opportunity.
Right. Exactly.
Poor ways of presenting. And if you're not sure how the other parent is presenting, I think mom would do well to say, hey, listen, I know that you love doing this kind of thing with your dad. We already had plans to go to the mountains, but if this is something you really want to do, it's really okay with me. I get it.
Right.
I don't want to put you in the middle. And he might say, oh, I really want to go hiking. Okay. Then don't feel guilty.
Right.
He's a kid who has a strong backbone and is willing to say what he wants. But if he says, sorry, mom, I really would like to go hiking, but you know how dad is. And you give him a hug and you say, I do know how dad is, and I don't want you to be stuck in the middle. And that will be golden to your relationship. So her current spouse needs to understand that much of what she's doing has to do with relationship.
Definitely.
Which is a long game, mm-hmm. and not winning a battle in the moment with the co-parent.
So it's a terrible place for a mom to be in too, between my current spouse and if the current spouse is making it a contest between my child and my current spouse, that's terrible.
Right. Right. So actually, I hope your spouse listens to this episode with you, because I think that the two of you need to talk about what the real goals are of how you respond to the co-parent. You can't control anything your child's father is doing, saying, being. Just let it go. Expect him to always be the way that he is.
Yes.
And then come up with, what will our plan B's look like? Okay, I've planned a vacation 6 months ahead of time, and he knows what week I'm going. And the week before, I get a phone call that says, I just got noticed there's a motocross tournament coming up next week in Florida. And Johnny wants to go so bad.
Right.
You know, how often does that happen? Is giving in to him and not letting you have vacation with your child something you're not willing to do? It is okay to say no on that. No, this is our vacation. It's been planned for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me know, but we will be doing this instead. But the next one that comes up at the last minute, and I'll probably be okay with. So you and your spouse need to talk about ahead of time, preemptively, what things are you willing to give in on, what things matter most, and then set your boundaries regardless of what the parenting plan says.
And I could see a huge opportunity here if collaboratively the current spouse learns to create really creative plan Bs together with her. Yeah. So this gives us a chance to plan together, anticipate. It's going to fall apart at the last minute. But we've gotten closer because we're problem solving ahead of time.
Yeah, because Ashley says, I feel defeated. And the reason you feel defeated is because you keep having some expectations that are constantly being disappointed.
Well, and she can't win.
If your expectation is always that I know he's going to mess up this plan I'm making, then you're defeated before you even get started. But if your expectation is, if he tells me he wants to have my child in the next 3 weekends and I don't have any big plans, I might be willing to give that up, but not my vacation or not my Christmas or not, you know.
Right.
So again, once you know that and you and your spouse are on the same page about that, then you're not stressed out about it anymore. You don't feel defeated anymore. You just feel like, I hate to say this, but we talked about this in our hump day thing yesterday, but it's very true. And Rick, you know me to be, I'm just a reality teller. Uh-huh. This is your cross to bear.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to say. And I don't take any joy in saying that, but it's the reality that you can jump up and down and scream and yell and go to court 5 times and spend $1 million and still feel defeated because it wasn't fair. And something tells me actually that your spouse sees the unfairness.
Yes.
And somehow believes we can fix it.
That it should be fair.
But you know, from your experience, not only in the last 5 years, but probably from the relationship when you were in it with him, that this is always going to feel unfair. So I suspect in the first 5 years after you separated, you just expected unfairness and you dealt with it.
Yes.
And then you married someone who saw that, well, that's just wrong. And I'm not letting somebody do that to my wife, and you know, which is admirable.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
You know. So it might be actually that you and your spouse get some therapy around this issue so that you, if you can't talk about it easily with one another, have someone facilitate, someone who understands blended families, someone can facilitate a conversation between you so that you can understand what it feels like to be the other. There needs to be more empathy between the two of you. Him empathizing with the fact that she might be emotionally smarter than him.
Oh, yeah.
That she's focusing on the emotional capital.
Right.
Which would be her relationship with her son over everything else, or, you know, giving in to her former spouse because that brings more peace to her. And so she's looking at her own emotion, because it doesn't sound like what her spouse is doing is bringing her much peace either. What he's attempting to do, maybe he thinks he's trying to bring her peace, but he's actually causing her more turmoil. And then maybe she needs to understand how hard it is for him to stand by. And maybe he's the kind of guy who really needs to be the protector and the provider. Mm-hmm. And now he's having to stand by and watch this clown.
Yes.
Take over his family life. And that's just not okay, you know? And,
So
I think there are valid points on both sides, but until the two of you can understand what those are and provide some empathy, I think it's going to be probably a strain on your marriage. It was interesting to me that she said, he, meaning her co-parent, and my spouse, comma, needless to say, comma, can't get along. And it was almost like that was assumed. Uh-huh. Like, this must be how it is for everybody. And I will let you know that isn't how it is for everybody. I've counseled a lot of blended family couples along the way. And most new spouses get this, and they do their best to either be the objective kind of supporter.
Right.
Gently and carefully. And they actually can sometimes be more level-headed about the situation than the co-parent is that they're married to. And I've mm-hmm. always, in my career, I've always appreciated the level-headed step-parent who could bring a little bit of balance to that mobile over the crib.
Yes, yes.
Because the ones that come in and just start snatching things off of it, thinking I'm fixing it when really I'm just screwing it all up, are the ones that are hard for us as therapists to deal with. And so, so don't assume, Ashley, that what your husband is doing is necessarily the norm, because I don't think it is. I think he would do well to try to be the level head in this and not instigate anything, even if that's just whispering in your ear, you're not doing it right. That's being an instigator.
Right. Yeah. And I would go so far as to say, I don't think if he's not divorced and he doesn't have a co-parent or he doesn't have children, he is not going to understand what she is going through and what it's like to be in her shoes. But that doesn't mean he can't support her. I would suggest stop trying to protect her from that. It's interesting. We just, last week's episode was on protecting children from a toxic parent. Well, don't try to protect your spouse from a toxic co-parent, but ask her, what can I do to support you through this? And then listen to her. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that's worthy. All right. Cool. Well, thank you, Ashley, for your email. And we appreciate those when they come in. And let us know how it goes. I'm always interested in, after we air these stories, what the results are later, whether or not taking our advice was helpful.
That, or no, you guys got it completely all wrong. That is not what's going on here.
I haven't had one of those yet. That's good.
No.
So good.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk to you all next week.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Hey, listeners, we've got some exciting news. Starting March 6th, I'll be hosting Hump Day Help every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time via Zoom. Each Wednesday will be focused on a specific topic. The first Wednesdays of the month will focus on parental alienation. The second Wednesdays will focus on parents dealing with false allegations. The third Wednesdays will be about surviving a narcissistic co-parent, and fourth Wednesdays confronting post-separation control and abuse. You can come to one or all. The only requirement is that you become a Patreon non-impossible VIP. The cost is only $10 a month, but I guarantee you'll get your money's worth out of these support groups. We'll run them through the end of May, and if attendance is constant, we'll continue through the summer. So get started today with Patreon. The link is in the show notes. The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.